రామాయ రామభద్రాయ రామచంద్రాయ వేదసే రఘునాథాయ నాథాయ సీతాయ పతియే నమః. అయోధ్యకాండ చాప్టర్ నంబర్ 64. దశరథ ప్యాసెస్ అవే. ది రిసైటల్ బిగిన్స్ నౌ. My dark sin, born of ignorance, gripped my soul and sent my senses adrift. To inform the miserable parents or not was the supreme question of the moment. Everything urged me to face the situation boldly. I filled a pitcher and took my way to the hermitage as directed by my victim. There sat the bereaved parents, aged, infirm, helpless, and all unable to move about, like birds shorn of their wings. They were talking about their son and wondered at his long absence. They eagerly expected him every moment, but they knew not I had blasted their hopes forever. Fear and grief choked my utterance, and I stood there like one dazed. The father was quick to catch the sound of my footsteps and said, "Darling, why delay? Hand us the water. Maybe you were playing on the river banks. Your mother is dying with anxiety. Come in. I am sure you will not bear in mind anything that we might have done to offend you, consciously or otherwise. Know ye not that you are a hermit, all stern and inexorable to yourself, but soft and compassionate to others? We are blind, but we see through you. Our life breaths are faint, but we live through you. Why are you so silent?" Terror choked my reply, but I mastered it with a mighty effort. My stern self-control and discipline as a scion of warrior kings served me well, and I replied, "I am a Kshatriya, Dasharatha by name. It is not given to me to call myself the son of such great-souled ones. A dark sin of my far-off past bore fruit now and guided my hand to commit a horrible crime condemned by the good. I came to hunt on the banks of the river Sariyu and lay concealed to shoot the beasts that came to drink of its waters at night. A sound as of an elephant drawing up water through its trunk reached my ears, and I let fly an arrow, guiding myself by the direction of the sound. All at once, an agonized cry pierced my ears, and I flew to the spot, but to find a hermit youth transfixed with my arrow and writhing in the grip of death. I aimed my arrow at what I took to be an elephant, but it brought death to your son. I went up to him and drew out the fatal arrow, whereupon his life breaths quit the body. He rose to the mansions of the blessed, exclaiming, 'Alas, my poor old parents, what will become of them, blind and helpless, now that I am taken away from them?' His last thoughts and words clung to you, 'This is what I have done. I slew your son, but all unknowingly, I threw myself upon your mercy.' The old hermit and his wife almost fainted away from uncontrollable grief. My cruel words pierced their hearts deep, very deep. He turned his eyes upon me where I stood before him, palm upon palm, and cried, 'Had you done this dark deed of shame and sin, and yet refrained from being the messenger of your own crime, your head had split in a thousand pieces through my dread curse. A warrior born that spills all wantonly a hermit's blood is sure to be hurled down from his high estate, be he the king of the celestials. He whose shaft strikes a knower of Brahman absorbed in meditation has his head split in seven, but your brain planned not the crime your hand has committed. Repentance dire and full has begun your punishment already. It is no light thing for you to muster up courage to bear the dread news of your own guilt. That explains how you will live to tell it. Else your glorious line, at whose head stands the mighty Ikshvaku, would by this time have been engulfed in the water of oblivion. Why speak of you? Lead us to the spot, for me would even behold our darling son who lies, I ween, stark and cold, drenched with gore.' I led them there, the unhappy parents. They gently stroked him, their only son, and all at once fell upon him, crushed by overwhelming grief. Their cries and laments were piteous to hear. 'Child, have you no word for us, no reverent greeting? Why do you cling to the cold, dank earth? How have we angered you, our darling? Know you not that I am dear to you beyond count? Behold your dear mother. Turn your eyes upon her. Clasp her in fond embrace, and let us drink in your words of ambrosial sweetness. Ah, shall I hear in the small hours of the morning your gentle voice chanting the Vedas and the Shastras, the prayers to the goddess of evening twilight duly offered, the sacred fires duly tended? You came to where I sat, lonely and with the shadow of separation from you drawing near, and sought to cheer me by many a word, by many an act. When shall I see another such? I am too weak to go the round of my daily duties, too weak to procure the means of sustenance for myself and your mother. I have none else in this wide world to look after me, none else even to guide me with my staff. You knew it all and gave me no occasion to remember it. So kindly and so watchfully did you serve me, as if I were an honored guest for whom fruits, roots, and other woodland fare were all too insufficient. Lo, your mother, tottering with age and infirmity, blind and doting upon you, grief has deprived her of what little mastery she had over her senses. How shall I maintain her through the long years, myself being utterly helpless? My darling, stay, do not go to the dread halls of death. Wait a while for your old mother and father, tomorrow, and we will all journey together. What will become of us in this forest without you or anyone else to take care of us? Haste not, we are even now coming with you. We will go up to the throne of Lord Yama, and I will look him in the face and say, King of Justice, pray excuse our son for not presenting himself before you as soon as he received your orders. We have none else to protect us, to take care of us, and we pray him back of you. I am sure the regent of the south, that is King Yama, will grant me my wish, lone and helpless as I am. Nothing can lead me to conclude that this your untimely death is an expiation of some dark sin in the far past. This wicked wretch has laid you low, a meek, white-souled saint. Rise up to the bright worlds and high where abide noble warriors that died for their king, for their god, and for their country, with laughing faces turned towards their foe, and all through the might of the merit you have laid up, through the might of truth to which I have dedicated myself. Rise up to the spheres of light, where sit in brighter glory such a heroic empress as Sagara, Shaibya, Dilipa, Janamejaya, Nahusha, and Dundhumara. Take your place by the side of those wise and great ones who devote themselves to the study and practice of the holy Vedas, of those who give away in glad gift houses, hamlets, villages, countries, and kingdoms, of those who unceasingly tend the holy fires, of those whose hearts cleave to their wedded wives, gentle and faithful, of those who give away countless heads of kine on auspicious conjunctions. May you join the ranks of such as ever wait with reverent solicitude on the good and the great. Sit with those who make a resolve to reach the high worlds of glory through the observance of such stern vows as the Mahaprasthana, and cast off their frail bodies where Ganga and Yamuna meet in joyful acclaim or in the holy fire. My long line of stern self-control tapasvins counts none who had not a seat in the resplendent halls of light. You are the son of my heart. Your slayer shall drink to the last drop of cup the misery and torment. They then busied themselves with the funeral obsequies of their son, torn from their sides, all untimely, who rose from the funeral pyre in his glorious body of light through the merit of hard-won tapas. The Lord of the Celestials came down to the spot and led him away in his chariot to grace the halls of Swarga. The youth turned to his parents before he left earth, saluted them with reverent affection, and consoled them in many a wise. He then rose from the earth and proceeded through the regions of the sky, honored by the denizens thereof. All this and more do I owe to the might accruing of my humble and reverent service to you, I will not be long separated from you in my abode on high. But the last words that reached their grief-stricken parents. The aged father rendered his son the last offices and turned to me, who stood trembling by with clasped hands of fear, and said, Protector of men, slay me too. Death has no terrors for me now that you have taken away from me my only son. You deserve to be consumed to ashes for having brought to his death my darling child, pure and stainless, but your heart guided not your hand, and I curse you lightly when I say you will suffer a similar terrible bereavement. You too will lose your son before your eyes, and your life breaths will go with him. You, a Kshatriya, split the blood of one who had dedicated himself to the service of God and man, but all unknowingly you did it, and hence saved from a deadly sin. A gift to the holy Brahmana comes back to the giver in the shape of untold merit. Even so, the grief that consumes me shall dog your steps and speed you to the dark realms of death. Lamenting in this wise, he built a blazing fire, entered it with his aged partner in life, and passed on to where his darling son sat on his throne of glory. I was racking my brains to find out the cause why this great grief befell me, engendered by the separation from my son, and flashed upon me the memory of this great sin I had been guilty of in my youth by shooting the arrow known as Shabdavedhini. An invalid, suffering from a dangerous illness, feeds upon what nourishes his ailments and hastens his death. Even so, my dark sin has sought me out. The words of the Great One have borne fruit, and I go today to meet my death. Kaushalya, my eyes have lost the power to see you, so have the kindness to touch me. Let me feel the pressure of your flower-soft hands. He sobbed aloud in the grip of mortal fear. What can it be but the marvelous efficacy of the hermit's curse, my banishing my beloved Rama to the woods, all innocent in thought, word, or deed? And more wonderful still, his cheerful acceptance of the unjust and the atrocious punishment I inflicted upon him, urged on to it by the venomed words of the cruel Kaikeyi. Else, how could I reconcile the even righteous tenor of my life, whose heart was ever wedded to Dharma, with the unholy and iniquitous plot so basely hatched by myself and my partner in guilt? Again, why should the unparalleled, nay, the partial affection that Kaikeyi had for Rama till now turn all at once into bitter hatred and malice? Most wonderful of all, why should the noble heart of Rama be utterly free of anger or ill will towards me who wronged him so grievously? No sensible person will immure his son in the dark and dreary forests, be he a devil incarnate, and if he did, no angelic son would view it with any other feeling than that of righteous indignation. Oh, that Rama touched me once, but once, with his flower-soft hands. Nay, enough if his noble face dawns upon my fading consciousness but once, and I defy death and all his host. They who journey to the halls of Yama take their last looks of those near and dear to them. Alas, Kaushalya, I see you not. My memory reels. The messengers of death bid me haste. Woe is me that my darkening eyes are not fixed on the divine beauty of my beloved Rama. A more miserable lot can never be mine. A grief of my being denied the company of my darling dries up the springs of my life, even as a summer sun drinks up the shallow puddles. Verily, they are gods immortal, not men, to whom it is given to behold the fair face of Rama 15 years from this day, radiant as the orb of night in her golden fullness, the priceless eardrops heightening, if possible, the sheeny splendor. Eyes lovely as the petals of a full-blown lotus, eyebrows darkly penciled and exquisitely arched like the bow of the cupid, the even row of his pearly teeth, the finely chiseled nose that puts to shame the jasmine buds, the noble proportions of his countenance that lend a charm by comparison to the full autumn moon or the blowing notices wafting sweet and delicious fragrance. How blessed are they who would gaze on it when he returns to Ayodhya from his self-imposed exile, like the regent of Venus re-entering his sphere. Kaushalya, my heart breaks under the cruel strokes of grief. My senses contact not the accustomed objects. The rays of the lamp flare up into darkness when the nourishing oil dries up. Even so, my senses are extinguished one by one when my mind reels in a stuttering throne. This grief hacks at the threads of my life, poor wretch, half dead. Even as a raging flood brings down the undermined banks. Raghava, my prince of heroes, O dispeller of grief, most loving, my refuge, my darling, where are you? Kaushalya, life is no more for me. Sumitra, what an awful grief falls on us. Kaikeyi, the dark fate of the Ikshvaku's glorious line, O cruel demon, my murderers who borrowed the shape of Yama for the while. So raved on the dying king, while there stood by him the noble mothers of Rama and Lakshmana. Heart-rending were his laments for the son of his heart, whom he was lured to banish to Dandaka. And at the dread hour of midnight, when the dying day brought forth in pain and travail her bright-eyed heir to light, the foaming billows of grief bore Dasharatha, the emperor, on their breast. On towards the dark and gloomy portals of death. Yet, lo, his eyes wore a look of holy calm and joy, as if surprised and awed by the presence of some mighty being. Mangalam Kaushalendraya Mahadiya Gunapte Chakravarti Dhanurjhaya Sarvabhaumaya Mangalam. There are many who would regard the death of King Dasharatha as a very horrible thing to have happened and very inauspicious. But it is necessary for us to remember that in Ramayana there are no inauspicious chapters. Ramayana is the literary form of Lord Ram, and Rama is the embodiment of all auspiciousness. So there is nothing in Ramayana that is inauspicious. And King Dasharatha teaches us how to live and how to die. Live thinking about the Lord and die thinking about the Lord. And it was a very glorious pastime. Haribol.